10 to 1, episode 180.
Unsettling Bible Stories.
Welcome to 10 to 1, a podcast where we sometimes do make top 10 lists.
Hooray!
I'm Brian Kozer.
I'm Melissa Kozer, and tonight it's going to be mostly me talking for once, and I'm dead tired, but I really wanted to do this episode, so I apologize in advance if my energy levels are poor, but I'm going to try my best to make this exciting and interesting.
It's an awful start,
but I'm keeping it real. All right, so these are the stories in the Bible that, like, you know, it's October right now, and I just felt like
Halloween is
this
next
would
week.
Be a nice homage. So we're going to start off with a bang, or rather with a death. It's Judas's death. And so, of course, he betrays Jesus and then repents afterward, or at least he feels bad about it. And he says, "I've betrayed innocent blood," and takes the money back to the Pharisees. And they say, "Well, what's that to us? You go deal with that as you see fit." And so he goes out and hangs himself. And then in Acts 1:18 is talking about Judas, and it says, "Now this man purchased a field with the reward of iniquity, and falling headlong, he burst asunder in the middle, and all his organs spilled out." And so, I'm not sure why they felt the need to give us that extra detail, but it's extra gory, you know? Like, it wasn't enough to just say Judas went and hanged himself. No, after that, the corpse fell from the rope, and when it hit the ground, it all just burst open. And we get that extra delicious detail there.
Hmm. Yeah, there must be something metaphorical that it was important to convey about.
Sure. This is what happens when you're a traitor to Jesus. Hmm. It's an extra grisly death. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's number 10. Number 9 is the fact that when Jesus dies, you've got the veil in the temple separating the Holy of Holies that splits. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It splits from the top down. It was really thick material. And then there's an earthquake too. Well, that's kind of cool. But then also you have dead saints that revive and they go walking through the city and a lot of people see them. And that's where I think it's kind of creepy. You know, none of us want to see people that we knew were dead and that have been in the grave walking around again. I know as much as being Christians, we talk about seeing our loved ones someday again, but I don't want to see them down here just randomly. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be really weird, and I would start doubting my sanity a little bit.
Well, I don't think if the picture is, it's just like Jim down the street is a zombie now.
They wouldn't. Even if the person that I saw was, I'm not saying that they looked zombie-ish, but even if somebody that I knew was dead, I suddenly saw them come walking down the street toward me, that would be really creepy, really weird.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
And that keeps in with the theme of the episode. But I will point out that I think the purpose of saying this is sort of a, like, the resurrection is,
I know,
changing the world.
Yep, I agree.
The
yep, the and I agree with all of that.
From the Old Testament,
I'm just here to add a new spin up to this.
Yeah,
help you think about it in a new way.
Okay,
all right, so that was number 9.
Yep,
now eight. Number 8, we have sort of this really bizarre picture that's not often presented in the Bible. You've sort of, like, we often have the throne room of God presented. And now it's as if God is up there, the angels are all assembled, and we have the demons are also allowed to enter into the throne room, or perhaps it's angels that are allowed to lie. I don't know. So the story here is that the king of Israel, the Hebrew nation at this point is split up into two groups. You've got Israel, the northern tribes, and then you've got Judah, which is the southern tribes. And all the Israel kings, they ended up being really bad dudes, and eventually they just got wiped out. Well, right now, the king of Israel is at war with some guys, and he wants the king of Judah to join him, team up with him. And the king of Judah is like, well, why don't we ask God if this is a good idea to go to war? And so all of the prophets that the king of Israel brings out, they all say, oh yeah, this is a good idea. God's message is that you are going to push out these enemies and you're gonna win the battle. And then the king of Judah, he says, isn't there a real prophet of God here? And the Israelite king says, yeah, there's this one guy, but I hate him. He never has anything good to say to me. Well, let's just bring him in anyway. So he comes in, and the king of Israel asks, are we going to win in the battle tomorrow? And Micaiah the prophet says, oh yeah, sure. God says he'll give the enemies into your hand. And the king says, come on, tell me the truth. And so then he's like, well, yeah, you guys are going to be defeated. And so then the king of Israel says to the king of Judah, didn't I tell you, this guy just never gives me any good news? And so then Micaiah says, hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing beside him on his right hand and on his left. And the Lord said, who will persuade Ahab, the Israelite king, that he will go up and die at Ramoth-Gilead? One said this, another said that. Then a spirit came forth and stood before the Lord and said, I will persuade him. And the Lord said, how? I will go and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And God said, you will be successful in your persuade him. Go forth and do so. Now, therefore, the Lord has put a lying spirit in the mouths of all your prophets here, and he has spoken evil concerning you. And in spite of hearing this, Ahab still decides, yeah, I'm going to go out and fight. And I just think that is so creepy, being told that God has decided to trick you. God has sent a lying spirit. I mean, being baldly told to your face, you're going to be tricked into thinking this is a good idea. And you know who okayed this? God. So that is my number 8. What do you think of that story?
I guess if God's going to trick you, then you're going to get tricked. Yeah, this one's getting a lot of use. By a lot of use, I mean, this is twice we've told this story on the podcast now. Years ago when we did our funniest stories.
Oh.
This was also in our funny stories
list. It's an intriguing story.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yes. Yeah, I guess we don't want to do a big digression on the council of the gods, but yeah. There being evil spirits in heaven is not out of the question.
And that
they too serve God
in their own way. I don't want to think about that. Moving on to number 7. All right. And that's the 10th plague on Egypt. This is in Exodus 11 and 12. And of course, there's been all these... plagues is what they're called, because plagues they are. You know, you've got flies by the droves coming in, and the cattle dying, and hail, and just awful things decimating the land and the crops. But then this one is where it gets really personal, and where there is no doubting that this isn't just natural forces. This or sheer bad luck. This is... something spiritual is out to get you. And God says that every firstborn in Egypt is going to die, of the Egyptians. The Hebrews are all spared.
Not true, but we'll come back to that at the end. Well, no, we'll just do it now.
Okay.
It's whoever puts the blood on the...
Yes, and all the Hebrews do that. They didn't?
I'm not sure if that's true.
Oh.
And I think some of the Egyptians did put it on their doorposts.
Oh.
Because some of the Egyptians follow out into the wilderness when the children flee. So it's okay. it's not a genetic or a family division here.
It's a faith thing.
It's those who...
That makes sense.
Yep.
Still, though, it's disturbing either way.
Oh,
like, because
sure.
You've got... There isn't a household of those that didn't put the blood on their doorposts. There isn't a household that gets spared. And so, and every family has a firstborn, or you are the firstborn, or mm-hmm. whatever. And so from the lowliest prisoner in Pharaoh's prisons up to Pharaoh's firstborn child himself. And so it's a... It's frightening to put yourself in the Egyptians' shoes, in the unbelieving people's shoes, that all your wealth and power can't save you. There's nothing you could do to prepare against this.
But you can. You just have to keep the Passover,
put the
blood
have to believe.
Over the lintel.
That's true.
You have to take an action.
Yes.
It comes out of your belief.
There is nothing...
It's not an unavoidable doom.
Right.
Nine plagues before, which were...
Yeah. Pretty obvious.
Pretty obvious.
Going on here, too. Yeah. It's still pretty creepy to me.
Oh, no. It's still creepy. For sure. But only your sixth creepiest.
Yes. Moving on to number 5. We have the book of Judges, the very end of it.
Uh-oh.
It gets kind of Stephen King-ish. Maybe this is what inspired him.
Shouldn't this be higher than number 5? Let's hear it.
I think some of the others are pretty good, too.
We'll have to see.
Yeah, so you've got a Levite. They were the holy tribe, the priestly tribe. They were supposed to go serve God night and day. And he's got a concubine, so not a wife, a mistress, and he's traveling with her. They stop at a city in Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin, I think. I forget.
Maybe so.
And anyway, the men of the city come out, and they say, they want the Levite to come out, and they're going to... have sexual relations is kind of the what's implied, and the guy refuses, but he throws his concubine out there to appease them, and after they abuse her all night, they leave her for dead, and to the point where the Levite, when he opens the door the next morning, she falls down dead right at his feet. She managed to survive all night, and then that was it. And so he's not really moved by this. Instead, he takes her body, hacks it up into 12 pieces, and sends it out to all the rest of the tribes of Israel and says, look what the man of this town did to my concubine. Come up with me and let's wipe them out. And everybody gets all outraged. And they go and wipe out that town. And it's just, it's a picture of Israel when they are at one of their lowest points, up to that point, at that time in history, and just how degraded through sin they've become. And it's just messed up to think about, to ponder how these people have so little feeling for and regard for human life.
Yeah. I don't think I can think of four or five creepier than this one.
Oh.
So, wow.
All right, here we go.
Sounds pretty dark.
What are we on, five? Yeah. So that was six? Yeah. Now we're on to five. And number five for me is demonic pigs.
So, oh, this one's just funny.
The idea that there could be demon-possessed animals is pretty frightening, I think. And so Jesus meets the demoniac of Gadara and casts the demons out. But right before he's about to, the demons beg him to not send them into the abyss, I guess into hell, or a place of punishment or something.
Yep.
And so instead he says, all right, you can go into these pigs over here.
They say, it's not the time.
Oh, yeah.
Don't cast us before the time. Which goes back to, I think it's the Book of Jubilees. There's a story that...
Which is not in the Bible, but...
Well, not in our Bible.
Yeah.
I don't remember who has the Book of
Roman
Jubilees.
Catholic?
No, it might be like the Ethiopian Orthodox, one of the smaller churches in the East. But the demons on the earth in Jesus' time, according to the Book of Jubilees, are the spirits from the dead Nephilim. So the Nephilim die, these hybrid creatures, giants, their spirits... come out and kind of wander the earth, and they make a deal with God that if he won't cast them into hell right away, then they will torment evildoers, and it will be, you know, they'll be serving God by staying on the earth.
Punishing.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, so that's an interesting story.
I bet that's interesting reading late at night.
Yeah, so if you've got that idea... then that's it the does, like the explanation of why there's so many demons Jesus is going around casting out. And also goes with the idea of Jesus as the second Joshua, because his name is Joshua. He's going into the promised land. He is casting out
all the
just like
doers,
Joshua had to go in guys. Defeat the giants to take the promised land. Jesus is going in casting out the demons. Yep.
Well, that's interesting.
Yep. So anyway, keep going with your the pigs.
I mean, that was it. So then they go into the pigs, and then the whole herd runs off a cliff and into some water and drowns. And that was it, really. Just demon-possessed animals.
Demon-possessed animals.
Creepy to think about.
What would
I
be?
I mean, demon-possessed anything, but like you. I'm okay. I'm not okay with people being possessed, but like it's more. I'm more used to that idea because, you know, people decide they want to get into the occult, and I think that opens up a door that they really should not be opening up, and then they might lose some of their free will in cases like that. But like the animals, man, they've got nothing to do with it, you know? They're just animals. There's, as far as we know. They don't have any choice in the matter. All right. Well, that was number five. Number four is just really most of the book of Revelation, but especially the trumpet and seal judgments. Ah. There's some crazy stuff that goes on there, and you've got the moon turns to blood, and the stars falling from the sky, and the river turns to blood. A lot of the rivers turn to blood, and the ocean turns to blood, and you've got great burning mountains falling from the sky, like comets and stuff. And then you've got the pit gets opened up, and these demonic creatures come out, and the way they're described is like, what is it? The body of a lion and the tail of a scorpion, and they're winged. But they've got the head of a man, or something like that.
It's with
like,
long hair.
Yeah. It's really messed up.
Great vision.
Yeah. And then you've got also one of the either trumpet or seal judgments is that four evil angels that have been bound in the river Euphrates are suddenly unleashed to go wreck destruction on mankind. And like, there's just so much dark stuff that happens in Revelation that it's exciting reading, and it's also not very exciting to think about. And I understand why a whole lot of people are very insistent that there is a pre-tribulation rapture for all of the believers in Jesus. And I'm with you. I really do hope that is the case. I hope that's true. Because I don't want to go through any of that stuff either. Even if I've got God to help me through it. All right. On to number three. So that was number four was Revelation. Number three is Samuel's ghost meets with Saul. This is in 1 Samuel 28. Every time I read this, it gives me the chills. Because Saul, after he's the first king of Israel, and after a bunch of bad decisions, God is just done with him. And now he's going up against the Philistines yet again, and he's begging God to answer him, and God is not answering him. And by this point, Samuel is dead, the only prophet in Israel. And so Saul gets desperate, and he says, Find me a witch or a medium, as it's translated in other versions. Mm-hmm. And so he goes and finds her, and he says, I want you to call up Samuel. And she says, well, okay. But then when Samuel appears, she's afraid because clearly this is not who she meant to summon. And it actually is Samuel back from the dead. And he says, why have you disturbed me? Why have you brought me back? And then Samuel says, after Saul pleads his case and says, you know, what's God got to say about how tomorrow is going to go with the battle? And Samuel says, well, tomorrow you're going to be joining me, you and your sons. And so from the first reaction of the woman to, oh snap, that's Samuel. That's not who I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. To Samuel then saying, you're going to be joining me. It's such a great way to put it. I think it's the third most chilling story in the Bible.
Whoa. All right.
All right. Number two, Dagon and the Ark of the Covenant. I love this one. And I know this was also in the funny Bible stories.
Oh, yeah.
But it's creepy because everything happens unseen. And you have people going in the next day and they're finding the evidence of what has happened in this battle between God and an idol. And it's, of course, no battle at all, no contest, because nothing can compare with God. But you have the Ark of the Covenant gets taken by the Philistines, and they place it in their temple to Dagon. And the next morning, Dagon, the fish god, has toppled forward onto his face. And so apparently the Philistines don't think too much of it. They put him back up on his pedestal and, you know, go on their merry way. Well, the next morning, again, he's fallen forward, but now his head and his hands have been cut off. And that's when they get afraid and they're like, we cannot keep this here. And that's in 1 Samuel 5. I just love that story. I think it is creepy, again, because you don't see anything that's going on there, and we are left to fill in the blanks in our imagination of what happened during the night. And I picture it as being more than just like, you know, the statue fell forward or whatever.
All right.
Take a little creative license. All right. I think this one is truly, truly terrifying. And especially if you were there. Do you want to guess what it could be? My number one?
When the Ark of the Covenant melted the Nazis.
That was a runner-up.
Okay. Next guess. I don't know. Another demon story.
It is.
Okay. The girl that had the demon.
No. But I did consider it.
Was a slave that her slave masters were using her. They were happy to have her demon possessed because she was more valuable. No, not that one? Okay.
That one's messed up.
What is it?
So this is the Seven Sons of Sceva.
Ah, yes. This is a good one.
Chapter 19, verses 13 through 16. Then some of the itinerant Jewish exorcists invoked the name of the Lord Jesus over those who had evil spirits, saying, "We command you to come out in the name of Jesus, whom Paul preaches." There were seven sons of a Jewish high priest named Sceva doing this. The evil spirit answered, "I know Jesus, and I know Paul, but who are you?" Then the man in whom the evil spirit was jumped on them, overpowered them, and prevailed against them, so that they fled from that house naked and wounded. Mic drop.
That's true. This one does belong in the top 10.
I don't really have anything to elaborate on that one. That one's just... That one's a good warning to all of us. Don't play around, guys.
How do you contrast that one with the disciples coming to Jesus and saying there are people casting out demons in your name, but they're not followers with us? And Jesus says, "Well, let them alone. If they're not against us, then they're on our side."
Because the way it reads to me is that these guys here don't believe in Jesus. They just want the power. And so they're using it as kind of a magic chant or whatever. If we've got just the right words, then we can exorcise the demons. Whereas the people that you're talking about, like they followed Jesus, or they believed in God. They just weren't in the inner circle of disciples.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe that's it. All right. Well, it's that time of year. So send us some feedback. What'd you think of Melissa's list? Did you think that Judge's story needed to be higher? Is there anything that we missed? You can email us, tto@kozer.us. And... we'll see. See if there's any other stories that deserve to be on here.
We've got some upcoming episodes. Some really great stuff in the pipeline. We're just waiting for Brian to get better. He's got a bit of a cold right now.
That's right. So we can't do any food-related podcasts until the until that's done. Maybe we'll have watched enough suitably themed spooky movies to do another top 10 list.
I think we've There's done not a chance.
We've done three or four. We've got all of November.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've got until Advent, so...
Why don't you explain that?
Oh, well, that was Ben DeBono on the Sci-Fi Christian. Was that last year, a couple years ago, pointing out that on the Christian calendar, in the same way that Lent precedes Easter and Eastertide, there's this, and I'm not going to be able to remember what it's called, but this sort of season where you're at the end of the year, it's getting darker, the crops have stopped growing, and the earth is dying, in a sense. And then it's at its darkest point, of course, as we go into Advent. And then that's when the days start getting brighter. And we're on our way to Easter and spring. And so that season starts at Halloween. It doesn't end with Halloween. So really, we could do our creepy movies. I mean, we've watched a couple here in October, but we could make that a November thing.
Okay.
Move it from October to November if we still want to do it.
Yeah, there's still time to watch The Blob.
I thought it was The Fly that you wanted to watch.
I do want to watch that one, too.
You just want to watch all the movies that start with the
all thing. The B-themed movies.
Anyway, I'm Brian Kozer.
I'm Melissa Kozer.
And you've been listening to 10 to 1.
A runner-up to Judas's grisly death is King Herod being eaten up by worms.
Oh, sure. Solid. Also, bowels related. I'll toss one in that I think maybe more subtly creepy. And that's Og, King of Bashan. That's around, I believe, in Deuteronomy.
Sounds about right.
That the Israelites defeat in battle. So, I'm not going to be able to remember off the top of my head all of the details of the story, but there's a lot of things that I think Michael Heiser, the Unseen Realm guy, and Father Stephen DeYoung of the, what are his podcasts? The Whole Council of God and Lord of Spirits. Both highly recommended. So he's the one that talked about, you know, Book of Jubilees and the Nephilim. Talks about those kind of topics pretty often. So Og is indicated to be one of the last of these kind of
giant
Rephaim characters. Rephaim separate from the Nephilim, but related. And there's this idea with this group and some others that the way that the king would have a successor would be that the king would become possessed by his god, because the king is part divine himself, and he would go into the temple, be possessed by the god of the temple, have intercourse with the temple priestess or slave or whatever term you want, who would then have a child who's now going to be the next king. And that's how this was continued. So that's creepy. That might be what the story about the Nephilim is talking about when you talk about the sons of men going into... Or the sons of God going into the daughters of men. Maybe if you take a camera into one of these things, you know, the old time machine with a camera, you're just seeing this kind of thing that I'm describing. But, you know, there's spiritual forces at work here. And maybe that's kind of the answer to What exactly does a Nephilim mean? So Og is one of these characters, and he famously has a very long bed, which has actually been found. So there's a bed they found, archaeologists have found, matching the exact dimensions given in Deuteronomy. So very well could be the exact same bed, which was apparently used for these this ritual of the king having a child. And it's also tied into like heaven meeting earth, and you know, this is how the land is going to be prosperous for another year, etc. This is apparently where this kind of thing happened. One more creepy thing to add to it. I don't remember exactly how long it is, and it's given in cubits, so it's, you know, depends on what kind of cubit we're talking about, the length between an elbow and a fingertip. Yeah. But the length of it, maybe it's like 11 feet long, something like that, also matches many myths across different cultures that talked about beings that came to them and gave them knowledge, told them things, technologies, or skills that that they only know because of these beings,
outside
and
knowledge.
They described them as being that same height, 11 feet tall or whatever it is, across different cultures, different peoples.
That's really weird.
Including, like, I think the Babylonians,
yeah.
The old Babylonians,
yeah.
That said, we have knowledge of the Abkhalu, the seven sages, who are these beings that came to us before the flood and taught us metalworking, other technologies, and we're the ones ruling the world because we're the ones that still have the wisdom from before the flood.
All right.